to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me is Rich. Hello, Rich.
What's going on, Jason?
Oh, not a whole lot. You know, we're still diving into this 50-game series that we've put upon ourselves, so to speak. Hopefully the listeners are enjoying it. And we're about to get into the era in which the 50-point games were the most common.
Yeah, it's about to get, not boring, very, very interesting, but it's about to get more commonplace than we could ever even assume. And you know, I put it up on our Twitter account at OverbackNBA a few days ago, the chart showing this era and the 50-point games that occurred in this era to all other eras in NBA history. And it is startling how many happen in this era. And it makes sense. We'll talk about, obviously, why it happens. But for how dramatic this era stands out over anything. Like, you would assume, it, you know, today's era, and the reason we're doing this show is because it feels like this year, in 2019, there are so many more 50-point games. And there are many more 50-point games than there had been in a lot of previous years. And it doesn't even scratch the surface. It's not even anywhere close to what this era is in 50-point games. So this one's going to be a fun episode to talk about. Just how ridiculous it got for a couple of years here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just really, you know, you could consider this kind of the equivalent of Major League Baseball's juice ball era. You know, 50-point games have gone from rare to almost routine. And it's almost hard to reconcile this era with the rest of NBA history because it was such an aberration, particularly 62 to 63. In those two seasons, there were 93 50-plus point games. It's 17 of the total in NBA history, more than any other full decade's worth. And if you look at 62 to 66, 7% of all NBA games in that era had a 50-point game in them. So 127 in those five seasons alone. So pretty incredible. And really, it's Will Chamberlain who's driving most of it. He had 100 out of the 127 of this time. So, you know, I mean, there are other reasons. I mean, Baylor's obviously a big driver of it. Jerry West has, you know, six games in this time. There are other players who are, you know, involved in doing a lot of scoring. But really, you know, the one who is the aberration is Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, and I hope you guys are ready because we're going to talk about all 100 of them right now. So starting in 1962.
Yes. Right. We're going to
break down every single number of every single game of all 100. So, yeah, this could be the longest episode of Over and Back ever, but I'm excited about it, Jason.
All right. Yeah. Six hours. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go.
Yes.
All right.
So, yes. So one, a little bit of business from last time I just wanted to just mention is, you know, we were kind of talking about, okay, when did 50-point games start really being something that happened in basketball? Because, you know, in the pros, the BAA, NBA, it started really in 49. And I couldn't really find it very much in terms of, you know, other leagues in college, in barnstorming or stuff. Those records really aren't kept. But if you kind of look just in college, just at 60-point games, it was happening occasionally in college. In D1, there were four of them between 51 and 60, including ones by Elgin Baylor, Oscar Robertson, not hugely surprising. In non-Division I, there were eight 60-point games between 1949 and 1955, including an 85-point game by Paul Arizin, a 60-point by Bob Pettit, and then games of 100 and 63 by Frank Zelvey, who was later a Lakers guard. So even 100 being broken before Wilt, obviously, in a different context. But I just wanted to kind of mention that as a little bit of business that we tried to get into last time, just to mention that. So it was, I guess the point is that it was not unheard of, but still, you know, incredibly rare.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had mentioned, or we had kind of talked about in a previous episode too, kind of the increasing number of 50-point games. You know, the first episode we did, and it was just like, yeah, there's just a few here. And then as we got, it was starting to get a little more commonplace. And then we said, you know, it's going to get crazy here with Wilt. We'll just kind of give you an idea that 1958, 50-point games make up 1% of all regular season games. That crosses the 100% threshold for the first time. So 1958, we're starting to see it become not necessarily commonplace, but becoming a little bit more, you know, happening a little bit more often. 1959, 1.7% of all regular season games featured a 50-point game. 1960, 3%. 1961, 4.4%, 14 total. And then 1962 is about to happen. So we'll get to that here in a sec. But yeah, some interesting stuff. We were trying to figure out you know, in the build up to this episode, if there was a lot of reaction from kind of the press and the media of like, what the hell is going on to our game? Or like, oh my God, this Wilt guy is scoring so many points. There's just these explosions. There's no one's playing defense. It was pretty hard to find anything in particular about that. My kind of conclusion is that maybe people just didn't care enough about the NBA to really give, you know, too much about these 50 point games, but it was really difficult. So we were kind of going on the SI Vault to see what we could find. I did find from October 30th, 1961, an article about, you know, the Philadelphia Warriors bringing in McGuire as their coach. And the idea here is, and here's kind of the quote that says, is his job is coaching the Philadelphia Warriors. His challenge is to develop further and properly use the game's greatest individual talent and toughest problem, Wilt Chamberlain. And his eventual effect may be to measurably change the character of professional basketball from the brawling, hustling, cigar in the face, eye in the till game it has been for decades to the major league sport, which it longs and deserves to be. So I do wonder if maybe people were thinking that this was a positive. Like that seems to me, like for whatever reason, I read that as like, hey, we're getting away from kind of the brawling and because that's what, I mean, basketball was, you know, the cage sport of what it was in years past and whatnot. And that feels like that was many, many years prior, but still I think maybe it had that thought to right. Like the major media or whatever. But the idea here is that like, hey, let's have Wilt Chamberlain be the star that's going to turn this game into the next century. That's how I read that quote, but I don't know if that's necessarily what it was. But yeah, I couldn't find much else in that story about what was going on there. And then obviously,
right? I would say that and I think you're right. I think like Sports Illustrated in particular in the 60s seems obsessed whenever it writes about the NBA is the idea of moving it away from being a Bush League sport to being mm-hmm. like a major league sport. That's a common theme in their writing. And I'm sure that there was, I mean, we know from other, you know, sources that there were definitely attitudes at the time of like, you know, this is crazy, this is going on. But probably most of the writing from that era, you know, isn't necessarily available online. But you know, I think definitely, you know, Frank McGuire, when he comes in, I mean, one thing he absolutely does is decides to, you know, hey, we're going to we're going to let Wilt be the engine of our scoring. We're just going to, you know, get him as many possessions as possible and have him score, even though, you know, he was on a team with a lot of other talented players, you know, Tom Gola, yeah. You know, Paul Arizin, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, Ben Taylor, you know, a friend of the show, has done some really good research into, you know, Wilt in particular on this time about whether it was, you know, sensible for them to do that or whether, you know, it was really better if they had a more balanced team. And we'll dig into that in just a little bit. But I wanted to, you know, mention that, you know, as the attitudes about Wilt are kind of evolving in the early 60s into the mid 60s.
Yeah, and this is actually a pretty interesting quote that I found in the March 2nd, 1964 Sports Illustrated. So this is kind of a little bit after the scoring explosion, but I think it gives us an idea of where we went from like that 1961, where it's like, hey, you know, Wilt's going to change this game a little bit, to 1964, where, as you said, you know, McGuire, his idea was like, let's just get it into Wilt, let's have Wilt score all our points. Well, then at this point, we have Alex Hannum coming in as the coach of this of Philadelphia, and things are a lot different now in terms of this. So here's kind of the the quote from this SI Vault says, "The team had the morale of a bunch of recruits immediately after their first GI haircuts," said Hannum. "I realized how completely inadequate the team had become. They had learned to depend on Wilt so completely they were incapable of beating a squad of rookies. I had to convince them that they, too, had responsibilities." There were experts who were sure that Hannum did not have a chance. "Chamberlain," said one Eastern sports writer, "is a loser. He has been all of his life. Neither his college nor his pro team has ever won a title because he won't take to coaching. All he wants to do is score points. Alex Hannum, however, insists he has no trouble at all getting to Wilt to play more his way. Whether he did it or not, he obviously persuaded Wilt, and to a man, the Warriors were willing to give Hannum a battle plan to try. What could we lose?" says forward Thomas Sherry. "Our shirts? We already lost those." So I don't know what happened to Thomas Sherry's shirts, but they're gone. So
yeah, they're gone. Yeah.
But yeah, so that gives us a little bit of an idea of like, we're seeing in 1961, it feels like it's kind of like encouraging. Hey, cool, Wilt's going to be a fun, different thing. Hey, this league's going to be good. And then by 1964, we kind of see the tenor around it is like, oh, wait, hold on. Like, all Wilt is doing is scoring and they're not really winning necessarily. So I don't know. Yeah, that was hard to judge of like, is that like kind of a freak out or reaction to the scoring? Or is it sort of like they're not winning even though he's scoring all these gaudy numbers or whatever? So it's kind of interesting. To me, it sort of feels like our modern day kind of James Harden thing where it's like, yeah, cool, he's getting 50 points. Yeah, cool, James Harden's winning MVPs. But when the playoffs comes, what does Harden do? You know, now his game's not going to work. Or, you know, we know that from the D'Antoni, you know, Suns era where it was like, yeah, this stuff's great in the regular season. But, what, you know, when it matters, are you going to go and win a title and do it with that? So I don't know. Yeah, it's just kind of an interesting reaction to see how 3 years can sort of change, or 3 or 4 years can really change, you know, the narrative around Wilt and his scoring.
Right. And obviously, you know, the fact that, you know, he had so many games in that. I mean, I can see where that would, that attitude. I mean, I don't entirely agree with it, but I do think that, you know, maybe it was a little bit too much Wilt or too much depending on Wilt being the scoring option rather than having a more balanced approach, even though obviously it makes sense for Wilt Chamberlain to take most of your shots on your team because, you know, of the weapon that he was. But looking at, you know, when we closed our previous episode, we were talking about the idea of Wilt and Baylor as being like number one and number two, you know, in terms of, you know, pushing forward, you know, most of the scoring that was going on, most 50-point scoring that was going on, you prior to 62. And, you know, kind of the tail of the tape before this season, you know, Elgin Baylor has 850 games so far, including an NBA record of 71, which he did early in the 1961 season. And he had averaged 32.3 points per game in 60 and 61, whereas Wilt had 15 50-plus games so far. His career high was 67, which was set late in the 61 season. In fact, his last 50-point-plus game was at that point. And he'd averaged 38 points per game in the 60 and 61 seasons. And he'd had one fewer season than Baylor to get his 15 versus Baylor's 8. So, well, clearly leading in terms of the number of 50-point games, Baylor obviously has the single-game record. You know, we talked about it kind of being, you know, at least kind of a close race, or at least something you could talk about in terms of, okay, who is the best scorer of the two? Is it Chamberlain? Is it Baylor? But really, you know, Wilt does seem comfortably ahead at this point, with Elgin having the bragging rights in terms of the single game record.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, of course, this next few years are going to kind of blow that out of the water. But it is pretty close so far. And if you guys want any more reading on Wilt versus Baylor, there is a great piece by a friend of the show, Curtis Harris at Pro Hoops History. It's called Classic Rivalry, Wilt Chamberlain versus Elgin Baylor. And it talks a little bit about a lot of the stuff that they did prior to coming into the NBA, even where they would battle on like playgrounds and stuff. And like it seemed more of like kind of a forced rivalry, even though I don't think these two dudes really hated each other on any level, but sort of like a kind of a professional rivalry in a lot of ways. But some stuff that comes up here. Wilt and Elgin Baylor scored at least 50 points against one another in the same game, and it so happens they all took place between December 1961 and December 1962, so there's a few games that they had. December 8th, 1961, as you mentioned before, Baylor in some kinds had some bragging rights. Not only did he have the single game record, but also in this particular game, Curtis got a quote here. It says, Wilt Chamberlain definitely was unhappy. He slouched huge. He slouched his huge 7-plus-foot frame onto a tiny stool in the corner of the Philadelphia Warriors dressing room, a picture of dejection, seemingly too tired to move an inch. As far as I'm concerned, said Wilt, it's just 78 points down the drain. We lost the game. And then Elgin, who's, quote, maybe a little bit more than a professional rivalry, said, Wilt can have all the records just so we can win the game. So that's, yeah. Unfortunately, would be kind of a theme over Wilt Chamberlain's next, you know, decade or so. It's like, yeah, good numbers, but yeah, you know, some other guys are gonna get the wins, be it Elgin or Bill Russell or, you know, a few others as well. So
yes. Although the record for Wilt's teams was still very good when he
For sure,
he scored 50 plus. Yeah, so yeah, that only goes to kind of a certain point, but it's a good point. Yeah, and there's another great, there was a Grantland piece a few years ago, obviously when Grantland still existed, on Wilt and Baylor, kind of in the 50s before they were pros. You know, they had some games against each other on the DC courts, you know, where Elgin grew up, and you know, in playgrounds and rec leagues and stuff, and you know, where there was some of that looking at the two of them as the elites, but there it was never quite the, you know, obviously they played different positions and they kind of had different games, so it was never quite the, you know, the same kind of one-on-one battles that you kind of think of in terms of the, you know, a one-on-one comparison. But they definitely, obviously, they were two of the elite scorers of their of their time, for sure. So and then one more thing, looking at between the two, in terms of the two of them, looking at their 1962 season, Wilt, of course, you famously averages 50.4 points per game for the season. Elgin, he averages 38.3, which would be fourth all time, but it doesn't officially count because he only played 48 games in the season because of Army Reserve obligations. Although he did end up playing 2,129 minutes, which is more than Bill Walton had in his MVP season. So, which is, you know, it seems like it should count based on that number there. A little bit of a historical injustice that you know, that Baylor's points per game season doesn't officially count in the record books in terms of most all time for that time. So
yeah, it does seem kind of silly. I mean, yeah, that'd be awesome to see. And yeah, like 48 games still seems like that's a pretty decent amount, right? That should count.
Yeah, I think we should make an official ruling that it now counts.
So. Okay, cool. I'll get Silver on the line and see what he can do about that.
All right. Yeah. Well, even if he doesn't recognize it, I feel like
we will. We can.
Go ahead. Yeah. Let's go ahead and officially recognize it. The listeners of the show recognize it. So
yes.
So absolutely. So yes. So the 59 season the 62 season in which there are 59 50 plus point games sets the record, of course, for 50 plus games was up from 14 in the previous season. The percentage of 50 point games, 15.8 regular season games were 50 plus during this time, which is way more than has ever happened in the league. If the same percentage happened this season, there would be 194 50 plus games, which would be kind of hard to keep track of.
Yeah, that would be tough. Yeah, we would not do an episode on that, talking about all of those games, because that'd be too many. So, as we're not going to do in this one either. So
yes, absolutely. So we'll hit a few of the highlights, of course. And Wilt, in fact, would begin the season with two straight 50 plus games. It was the first time that it happened on consecutive dates. And Elgin Baylor's first comes early in December, where he has – it's his first 50-plus point game. Bob Pettit on December 6, 61, has his first, and it is a 50-30 game, which for non-Wilt Chamberlain players has only been done otherwise by George Mikan previously. It's going to be done by Elgin Baylor 2 days later, and then would later be done by Mel Daniels and George McGinnis. So only six players in NBA history ABA history have ever done that.
Yeah, no, that's an impressive little number there. And yeah, we're in December, by the way, as you can tell. We're like this is, I mean, we're in the early parts of the season, and it is still already, it's gotten ridiculous already, and it's going to get even more crazy as we go on.
Yes, and Wilt has already. He'll have eight before December, and we'll obviously keep piling them up as we go. And then the game that you refer to that Curtis wrote about, December 8th, 1961. This is definitely a notable game. The first time that two players have 50 plus in the same game. Actually, the only time that two players have 60 plus in the same game. Elgin Baylor has 63 points. The 60-30 game that we referred to, Wilt Chamberlain, 78 points, 43 rebounds, the only 70-40 game ever. This does happen in three overtime, so a little bit of a asterisk, but Wilt setting the single game points record at that point, and still it is the third most points that are ever been scored in a game. Pretty good.
Wilt's third 50-40 game as well. So, you know, nice little 30-40.
Right. Game. Yeah, not bad. Yeah.
50-40. Yeah. It's right. Oh, God, Wilt Chamberlain. And then he comes back a few days later, actually the next day, and drops 60-30. Because of course he does. Yes. And then the next day after that, he dropped 55. So that's right. He goes 78, yeah. 61, and 55 in back-to-back-to-back games. Unbelievable. Jesus.
Right. Yeah, back-to-back-to-back nights. The 8th, the 9th, yeah. And the 10th. So,
and then this bomb, maybe he had the day off. I don't know. On the 11th, he might have not had a game that day. The 12th, he comes back and he hits 54 as well. So,
yeah.
takes a day break and then comes back. Oh, and then the next day he comes back and he has 52 points. So, basically five out of the last 6 days, he's got 50 points.
Yes. And on the same date, but on a different game, the 13th, Elgin Baylor, the first recorded 50-point triple-double, 52, 25, and 10. So, not bad there. We're going to skip a little bit later into December, although Wilt does have three performances between the 13th and the 25th, but he has his first, the very first Christmas 50-point game, 59 points, 36 rebounds by Wilt Chamberlain. The next night, he does have 51 and 29, but he has a 42.78 true shooting percentage, which is the worst ever to that point in a 50-plus game. And I wonder, how bad does your true shooting percentage have to be before a 50-point game is considered a bad game? I don't know. It was a win for the Warriors against the Nationals, so it didn't drag them down too bad. But at what point does a 50-point game become a bad game if you're taking so many shots? Because there are only really a handful of examples of 50-point games having a true shooting percentage below 50%, and Will has almost all of them. So
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to wonder, the one game that comes out to me, even though it was a fun game and I would never, you know, trade it, and it was one of my favorite games ever to watch, was the last game of Kobe's career where he's just chucking. You know what I mean? I think, what do you end up with that game? Like 60, somewhere in the 60s. I forget what it was. But like, he's just, I think he misses like 40 shots or something like that. He's just like, he's just chucking and ready to go. But I think it's your shooting actually ended up being, he took a ton of threes in that game too, even though he missed, I think, like 15 threes or whatever. Right. But that's one where I'm like, ah, you know, he got 60, but that was really not a good game. But like, it was still fun. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those weird, like, oddities where I'm glad it happened. I'm glad I watched it. But, like, I don't know that I could call that a good game. It was just a game where Kobe shot the ball quite a lot. So,
right. I think that was 60 points, 50 shots. And, but he was, like, kind of carrying that team down the stretch. They wouldn't have won that game if he hadn't have done that. And so I do think even that one, and I get what you're saying, but even that one, I think, you know, would not quite meet that threshold. Although you're getting close to that with, some of the shots. But again, you know, when you're scoring that much, you're so hot, you might as well take all the shots because, you know, you don't really necessarily have, you know, many better options at that point. So
I'm trying to get the true shooting percentage for that game here real quick. Let me oh, it was right there. So he was still like 54.3%. Okay, so he actually wasn't bad at all. So all right, so
Yeah, 56 is about average at this point. So so
that's not bad. Yeah, 22 of 50 from the field, 6 of 21 from three.
And in Wilt's era, I think you're going to dig into it a little bit later. But the average true shooting percentage during this era, from like 62 to 66, is like 48.6%. So so 42 definitely would be quite a bit below that, but most of the games here are like in the low 50s. So, you know, they're definitely above average for the league, especially at the time. And then another, on the 27th, Wilt also scores 53. So he has 59, 51, and 53 on a back-to-back-to-back. So not quite as impressive as the previous one, but still, you know, pretty good. and this is 2.5 weeks later after that other stretch. So.
Oh boy.
Pretty incredible.
We're in December.
Yes.
We're getting to January, though. We're almost to January. And then, I don't even, like, what do we even do anymore? It's just Wilt. Wilt, a lot of Wilt. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah,
yes. Yes. So Wilt on the 29th has 60, and also Elgin Baylor has 52. This is the same game, 12, 29, 61. This means that December 1961 had 19 50-plus games, which is more 50-plus games than any other full season in NBA history except for the 1963 season, obviously the next season. Baylor is going to basically bow out of this race, although Chamberlain is way ahead at this point, because he's only going to play 6 regular season games after January 1st because of his obligations there. It's worth noting that the Warriors did end up winning that game against the Lakers. So, Wilt gets a little bit of revenge for the previous showdown in which the Lakers won, despite Wilt having the 78 points.
Absolutely. And then one of the other games notable in January as well for Wilt, January 13th, he gets 73 points. So it's second 70-plus point game season, then the second highest total in NBA history as well. So, yeah, he's doing work out there. And Wilt's second ever 70-35 game as well. So,
right.
Oh, and then the next night he has 62, because of course he does. So.
Right, of course he does. On the 17th of January, and Wilt has 62, and Jerry West has 63 points. So this is, of course, with Baylor out, West is taking up the mantle of the high scoring. West and Baylor become the first set of teammates to have 50 in a season, and the only pair to have 60 in a season, because West has 63 points here. West is at this point the 12th player ever with 50 plus, and the 5th ever with 60 plus. And it sets the career high for points that he would never again amass more than 63 points in total in his career. So, and West, this is definitely a time in which he's really emerging as a co-star of the team. Let's say, I mean, obviously Baylor's already been the star. I think this is West's second season, or maybe third in the league. So he's really emerging as it being, you know, instead of being, you know, Baylor's team, it's now going to be West and Baylor's team, kind of, you know, here going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so a few games later here, as we're kind of doing these back-to-back-to-back things with Wilt, January 19th, he has 53 points. That means if we go back to the 17th, where he had 62, the 18th, where he had 54, and the 19th, where he has 53, he goes 62, 54, and 53 on back-to-back-to-back. So
right.
That's
pretty good.
Oh, boy. This guy.
Yes. And then West and Wilt again on the 24th, again, separate games. West is 50, Wilt is 55 on January 24th. And then by the end of the month, we have January, we will have given us 15 50-plus games, which would be the fifth highest total for any season in NBA history. So, again, you know, setting huge records here, particularly in those 2 months. Wilt has a few in early December, and then we get a new player on the list, Cliff Hagan, who becomes the 13th player to have 50-plus. He and Bob Pettit become the second set of teammates to have 50-plus in a season. Obviously, West and Baylor had done that just earlier on. And he is only the second 30-year-old to break 50 after Dolph Schayes. So we have a few fun facts about Cliff Hagan to share with you.
Well. Yeah, so here's some stuff about old Cliff, because, yeah, we might as well, since we've been only talking about Wilton Baylor, we might as well break aside to talk about some of these other guys. Nickname was Little Abner, coined by Hawks broadcaster Buddy Blattner. So Little Abner there. Five-time yeah. All-Star, two-time All-NBA, known for stepping up big in the playoffs as well. Famous as well for being involved in the trade that sent Bill Russell to the Celtics, which, again, like, is a trade that is always like, oh, man, the Celtics, they robbed them. But, like, Cliff Hagan was good. And then, like, Ed McCauley right. was very good. Like, they got two Hall of Famers, the Hawks. And they got a title in the deal as well. So it, like, actually worked out for – yes, it worked out yeah. a little bit better for one team, but it still worked out pretty well for the other team. Yeah, maybe sure. historically not yeah. nearly on the same level, but still not a terrible trade. Yeah. And so,
well, and also the fact that the racism in the motivation for the trade, I think, is definitely part of the,
sure.
Of why the trade was really, really bad. But yes, but the Hawks did, they had success and they did get a good player out of that one. Although the Celtics obviously won big with, 11 championships to one. That's definitely
maybe. Yeah. Maybe beat him out a little bit in that. But Hagan, known as a versatile scorer, hook shot was a weapon with either hand as well. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said he's seeing, he was kind of inspired by Hagan's hook shots and helped Kareem basically kind of decide that the skyhook could be a really good weapon for him as well. He was the Dallas Chaparral's player coach as well. We talked about that during our past Mysteries of the 70s thing. I became the first player to play in the All-Star games in both the NBA and ABA, which is pretty interesting as well. And then there's also a bunch of stories in Loose Balls, as I said, I think we mentioned as well during our Basketball Mysteries of the 70s series, about him and his notable temper on the courts, which there were a lot of fun moments in that as well. So yeah, it's a little bit about Cliff Hagan. So who makes an appearance here, finally, to break up the monotony of Wilt and Elgin so far.
Yes, and we then we have we got Wilt Chamberlain again on the 13th. He's going to have a big scoring stretch here coming up as well. But we have another new name on the list, Richie Guerin, with 51 points in on Valentine's Day 1962. And he'd already broken through the previous season with one performance, and he and Wilt are about to have another one on the 25th of February. Wilt has 67 and Guerin has 50, and Guerin has 50, 11 and 13. So the second ever recorded 50 plus triple double. This is the third time that two players have had 50 in the same game, both ever in history and also in this season. This is the first time that it's not Wilt Elgin, however. And then a week later, we're going to have another Wilt milestone. But before that, I think we should talk a little bit about Richie Guerin.
Yeah, so here's a little bit about kind of the Richie Guerin lineup here. So, we had mentioned him briefly in a previous episode because he scored 57 points in 1959, and we mentioned that, he'd maybe pop up here again, and here he is. So, 1962, he reaches the 50-point mark twice. As we said, he does it 11 days apart. First coming, as you said, on February 14th against the Celtics. Guerin put up 51 points and 10 rebounds in a win against Boston as well, so that's a pretty big deal at that point to get a big win against the Celtics. February 25th, Guerin once again hits the mark, this time in a triple-double. He scores 50, grabs 11 rebounds, dishes out 13 assists. More impressively, Guerin and the Knicks defeat the Warriors in this game as well. And it should be noted as well in this game that, Wilt had 67 and 21. But, so not a bad game for Wilt, yeah. But we're talking about Guerin. So screw Wilt right now. We're talking about Guerin. Guerin gets his moment in the sun for a bit. What I think is pretty interesting about these two games, though, more than anything, is Guerin scores 50 against two of the NBA's best teams and the eventual Eastern Division Finals matchup between the Knicks or between the Warriors and the Celtics. And his Knicks, Richie Guerin, of course, playing for the Knicks right now, they're not that good. They were 29-51 on the year and not close to making the playoffs despite Guerin's heroics. But in both of these games where he steps up big, they get wins against two of the best teams in the league. But yeah, ultimately, it's not enough for their team to ever be good on like a night-to-night basis. And yeah, they're only 29-51 on the year despite his good scoring.
Yeah, and Garen was kind of perennially stuck as a, you know, great player on a bad team. He and Willie Nulls were, you know, both really good players, but the Knicks, whatever, could not surround them with, you know, a particularly good team in the late 60s and the late 50s and the early 60s. Garen did end up having some success as a player, you know, team success as a player and as a coach with the Hawks, as well as Nulls, you know, going on to the Celtics. So they were able to get out of there and find a better atmosphere. For whatever reason, the Knicks, it took a while for them to finally find some competency up until, you know, the mid to late 60s, of course, famously. But back to Wilt Chamberlain. We got the big one here on March 2nd, 1962. 100-point game. And of course, you know, we've already done an episode on this with 100 facts about Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. I do want to note that this is Wilt's 15th 60-plus point game in his career, in the 14th this season, and his third 70-plus point game in here. And obviously, the first time that he or anyone, or in the last time probably, will have 100 points in a game. So, yeah, I would refer, for more on this one, I would refer to the other episode that we did on this game, because it's like so many incredible facts about this game.
Yeah, just a legendary all-time game. Yeah, we don't need to talk about it again here, because we've done it many times and you've probably read much about it. But yeah, that episode we did, the 100 fun facts about the 100-point game, is pretty awesome. So definitely go and check that out if you can.
Yes. And the last new name for this season is Rudy LaRusso. The Lakers end up setting a record, having three players with 50-plus in a season, and that would not, in fact, be tied until Golden State in the 2019 season would do so. I guess they have the opportunity for four, perhaps. And LaRusso is the 14th player at this point ever with 50-plus in the game. And interestingly enough, neither West nor Baylor played in this game. So LaRusso, you know, carrying things on his own, able to... I've, you know, pretty incredibly, you know, for a guy who I'd always kind of thought of as a as more like, you know, rugged rebounder defender type player, but he leads right. The team, and then they actually win this game. They beat the Hawks in this game to there. So pretty incredible performance for him. And we got a little bit more on Rudy as well.
Yeah, so a little bit about it. As you mentioned, he kind of, to me, felt like more of kind of a bruiser, rebounder, kind of does a lot of all over the court type thing. But yeah, and he averaged only 15.6 points per game in his career, which is not terrible, but, you know, just, it doesn't quite seem like a guy who would be capable of driving 50, but anything is possible in 1962, clearly. He was an all-star, five-time all-star. First non-Hall of Famer to score 50 points as well, as we're kind of going through this list here. There is going to be many more, as we did our episode on surprising 50-point games. He is not the only one, but at this point, he is the first non-Hall of Famer to score 50. Some other Rudy LaRusso fun facts here. He was nicknamed Roughhouse Rudy, involved in a couple of famous NBA fights, including a brutal battle with Tommy Heinsohn in 1962, and Willis Reed's beat down the Lakers in 1966, which came after LaRusso and Reed had been trading elbows as well. 1967, he is traded to the Pistons, but refuses a report to Detroit. He's suspended and fined by the NBA, eventually making his way to the Warriors, where he finished his career with two All-Star seasons. One of the few NBA players who retired averaging 20 points per game in their final season as well, which is pretty cool. And then I think the funnest of all fun facts here, he had a small cameo role in Gilligan's Island. He was in the episode Bang 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 as Agent Michaels. So yeah. There you go. Rudy LaRusso, Agent
there
Michaels.
You go.
Gilligan's Island. So yeah, not many other people can say they scored 20 points per game in their final NBA season and also had a cameo role in Gilligan's Island. But Rudy LaRusso can say that.
He can say that, yeah. So you screw the Hall of Fame. He was in Gilligan's Island. So.
Right, exactly. He's in the true Hall of Fame.
Right. The true, yes. Yeah. Gilligan's Island. And we also, we cap off this season with two playoff performances. Wilt Chamberlain, he has 56 points in 56 points on March 22nd, 1962, and 35 rebounds in that game. This came in a win over the Nationals. And then Elgin Baylor in the NBA Finals. He ends up with 61, setting a finals record. It was the first 60-plus game in playoff history, and only the second 50-plus in finals history, coming after Bob Pettit. And it was the last of his four 60-plus point games in his career. So capping off, you know, quite the remarkable season.
Yeah, it's just an incredible stuff here. So now, kind of, I think it's a good time now to sort of reset and look at the number of players that had the 50 plus and all that sort of stuff. So there's seven players with 50 plus points per game in this 1962 season. Wilt Chamberlain has 46 of them, as we mentioned. Even without Wilt, the 13 50-point games would have been 3.61% of the total that season, more than any other season outside of the early 60s. So essentially, yes, Wilt breaks the thing and makes it all ridiculous, but even without him, it's still a ridiculous season with a lot of guys getting 50.
Yeah, absolutely. It really, yeah. I mean, it was pretty incredible. And obviously a lot of it has to do with, the pace is getting faster. Teams are scoring more points than ever. The points per game in this season increased from 118.1 to 118.8, which sets an all-time record that would never be surpassed. And we have things happening like this is the first time the league has expanded since the early 50s when the league contracted. The Packers joined the league this season. And also there was a rival league. The American Basketball League began play. It took a few good players, not really a whole lot of great players or anything. It didn't have the impact that the ABA would have later, but maybe those things kind of had an effect. And something that we kind of forgot to talk about in our 50s episode, the lack of the 50 plus games in 55 to 57 after the shot clock began also coincided with the league contracting in the early 50s from 17 to 8 teams. So perhaps the league being more balanced was a factor in that, and perhaps expansion may have played a bit of a role in this season, and could have played a role as things are going forward in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah, that it will be something that we'll kind of have to monitor as we go on, because we have seen in the history of the NBA is when expansion happens or contraction happens, like weird things happen. The Bulls winning their 72 probably doesn't happen without the Grizzlies and the Raptors coming to the league and kind of changing a little bit of the, stretching out the talent a little bit, even as subtly as like two teams can really do a lot. And we'll see throughout history that can sort of change and waver. So I do wonder if, that we didn't really address that every team got a little bit better because there was just fewer of them. So the better players all kind of came together on better teams. That might have been, a factor in that. But yeah, we're going to see oddities throughout, this series with expansion and contraction. So yeah, it's pretty interesting to note that, and we'll see how that kind of plays out in the future as well.
Yes. So speaking of the ABL, there were 4 50-point games that it had in its history. I did not include them officially in our spreadsheet, but Roger Kaiser, Connie Hawkins, Tony Jackson, and Bill Bridges all have 50-point games in the 1.5-year history of that league. So now you know.
Famous ABL. Yeah, the famous, yep. Famous ABL. So that's...
Yep. So any other things on the averages in terms of this era?
Yeah, so let's kind of look at this. We've been doing that with every one of these, eras. We look at, the average field goals, attempted average free throw. So for this era, so this 1962 to 1966, we've obviously only gone through 1962, but we'll go through everything else a little bit quicker here. But average field goal attempted for 50-point games in this era, the 62 to 66, is 41. The average free throw attempts for 50-point games in this era is 17. The average true shooting percentage is 58.5. And now you had sort of mentioned this as well, that the average true shooting percentage in this era was 48.6. So we're seeing a huge, when you score 50, you're being elite. You know what I mean? Like compared to other guys in this era, it's not like it's very easy to score 50. It's still very difficult. And the guys that are doing it because they're just shooting better in the games they do it. But I thought this is interesting to kind of compare it to games all time. And then of course, in 2019, which we've been doing for a while as well, the average field goal attempts I mentioned for this era is 41. Average field goal attempts in 50-point games of all time are 34.4. So obviously that number is going to go down a little bit because of the inclusion of the three-point line, and that's what we see with 2019 as well. The average field goals attempted in 50-point games this year, 2019, is only 31.6, so that's almost 10 fewer than it was in this 1962 to 66 era, but yeah, obviously with the inclusion of the three-pointer is going to change it a lot. The average field goal attempts this era, as I mentioned, 17, all-time is 15.1, and then 2019 is 14.1, so again, more free throws attempted as well. Average true shooting percentage, as I said, for this era is 58.5. Average true shooting percentage all time are 50-point games, 66.9, and then this year, 72.2. So again, the inclusion of the three-point line and just efficiency being more important than anything, we see that sort of rise as the eras go on. And yeah, 72.2% compared to 58.5% from 1962 to 66. So just some comparisons there as we kind of look out throughout history.
Yeah, absolutely. So diving into 1963, overall, we dipped down only 34 50-plus point games this season. Of course, still by far the most outside of the 62 season. In fact, 9.4% of the regular season games of this season were 50-plus, still a huge number, obviously. League-wide, though, points per game went down by a significant margin, 118.8 to 150.3, still one of the bigger numbers in NBA history. And the club is less democratic this year. Only two players have 50-plus this season. Wilt has 30, and Elgin Baylor has 4, and Wilt only averaged 44.8 points per game this year. So, you know, he's slacking.
No, come on, Wilt. Put some effort into it. Come on, man. Jeez. Yeah, but no, this is, it's interesting that, yeah, that prior year we had, you know, so many different people. Your Rudy Lewis's, your Jerry West, your Elgin Baylor's, your Will Chamberlain's, your Bob Pettit's, your Cliff Hagin's, you know, all those kind of guys. And then this year, yeah, just kind of, you know, Wilt and Baylor. It's just down to those two, which is strange because, yeah, there was so many different dudes that were just kind of getting involved in it the prior year. And then now this year, it just goes back down. It's just the year-to-year change is remarkable, even though there you know, there was still plenty of them being done by those two men. But, yeah, the idea that, like, not as many guys were in there is just – I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely interesting for sure. So digging into a few of the key games that season – Will Chamberlain actually has 56 in the first game of the season, and although he's not the first to do so in the first game of the season, Baylor had previously done that as well. It's only been a few times. And then on the 26th of October, Wilt has his fourth 50-40 game, 50 points and 41 rebounds in a big win there. And then two nights later, Wilt has 53, but he has it on the worst field goal percentage, 23 out of 60 in a 50-plus point game. It's the only true shooting percentage under 40 in a 50-plus point game. He has a 39% true shooting percentage. And it's his final game with 60-plus field goal attempts, and in fact, the final game in history, at least so far, with 60-plus field goal attempts there. So this might be an instance of a bad 50-plus point game. This might be one of the few instances where you could almost say for sure that this was bad.
Yeah, and they lost too, which is also important to the loss of the Royals. So, yeah, you lose, you have the worst field goal percentage, you take 60, you know, field goals, and you lose. You know, that might be it. This might be our, when is a 50-point game truly bad? And this might be it. So, it just seems weird because 53 is still 53. You know, it's still Wilt, and it's still, you know, a good game. But, yeah, this might be it. This might be that threshold that we were looking for.
Right. 53 on 60 shots, you know, less. You know, so, right. Yeah. He breaks 70 a couple times in November on the 3rd of November. He has 72 on the 16th of November. He has 73. And then later on in December, he keeps, you know, racking them up in November and December. In mid-December on the 14th, he has another 60-30 game. So, and then that is also the last Wilt Chamberlain Elgin Baylor 50-plus duel. It's the third time for them and the fourth time in NBA history that it's ever happened in any game. The other one involving Wilt and Richie Guerin. Wilt has 63 points, 30 rebounds. Elgin has 51 points, 9 rebounds. So quite an incredible one there. And the winner of that game was actually the Lakers. So I guess Elgin won in a certain point of view in terms of the head-to-head. I believe his team won twice and Will's team won the other time. So
absolutely. Yeah, and between the two, we also had two more 70-point games as well. November 3rd, November 16th, Wilt, his fourth 70-plus point game, then the fourth highest point total ever, and then he comes back 13 days later and gets 73, so that becomes the third most ever, and that's his fifth 70-plus point game. So yeah, he's really just changing the record books here. poor Elgin is just getting pushed back more and more and more every single time, so...
Yes, although Elgin does on the 15th, he has another 50-plus point game. So back-to-back games with 50-plus. I believe that's the only time he had done that in his career on consecutive nights. And then on the 18th, Wilt of December, Wilt has 61 against the Hawks, and this would be his ninth 50-plus point game against the Hawks in these two seasons. I wanted to kind of look and see if he had victimized, you know, any teams in particular more than others over these two seasons. If, you know, any one of them bore the greater weight, but the Hawks actually had the least of those with only 9 in two seasons. So
there you go. So yeah, beating up on the Hawks a little bit, but we'll talk about that. We have a little bit of the numbers here in terms of opponents and teams and whatnot. We'll get to that here in a sec though, just to see if it does stand out.
Yes. Wilt, right, yeah, Atlanta now. So I'm sure Atlanta still bears the shame. You know,
yeah, I'm sure they do. Yeah, they still hang the banners. Yeah, they still hang the banners.
Exactly. He well had 67 and on January 11th, 1963. He had 62 on January 29th. And this was his 11th 50-plus game against the Knicks in the two seasons. So, and then on February 13th, Wilt has his first 50-plus triple-double, 51, 29, and 11. And Elgin Baylor, on the same night but a different game, he has the last 50 of his career, so 18 total, and also the second 50-plus triple-double of all time, 50, 15, and 11. So two 50-point triple-doubles on the same night but in separate games. Pretty incredible.
That's awesome. Yeah, both and fittingly, Baylor's team wins. They beat the Celtics, and Wilt's team loses to Detroit. So just a real encapsulation of kind of what's going on at this point right now. And fun little note there, but yeah, 50 point triple doubles on the same day between two different players is a man that the world would explode if that happened today. You know what I mean? Like if James Harden and like, I don't know, Russell Westbrook. Yeah. Like we would lose our minds about that. It's just like, oh yeah. Elgin Wilt. Yeah. There you go.
Well, we'll talk about that later, but yeah, that definitely, they never did it in the same night, but they definitely were obviously just, taking that barrier and busting through it in recent years, but
sure.
But we'll get to that eventually. You know, we'll save it for later. Yes, and so as you know, Wilt has his final 50-plus performances of the season. He has his 10th against the Lakers in two seasons, then his 10th against the Royals in two seasons, the 11th against the Packers Zephyrs franchise, of course, the expansion franchise. That he victimized a fair amount, although not like substantially more than many of the other teams. In fact, his 51 point game on March 6th of that year, that was his only loss in those 11 against the Packers and the Zephyrs. So poor Walt Bellamy, he was victimizing him, although Walt got one here for sure. And then a couple days later, he has his 12th performance against the Pistons, which was the most against any franchise during that time, which I was expecting it to be the Packers. So the fact that it was the Pistons was a little bit of a surprise. And then his final performance of the season on March 10th, he actually has 70. And this was the sixth 70-point game of his career and the eighth 50-plus game against the Nationals in two seasons. So they were the least victimized team of all the franchises in the league.
And then he lost. He still lost the game. He scored 70 and lose. Come on.
Right.
Warriors, come on. What are you doing here? Come on. Jesus. Actually, this is probably a pretty good time to jump in on the teams and opponents here as you've been kind of going through it. So this is of this era, 1962 to 1966. Unsurprisingly, the Philadelphia Warriors have 46. The San Francisco Warriors have 49. Combined Warriors, 95. So 95 total for the Warriors in general. The Lakers have 17. Philadelphia 76ers have 7. St. Louis has 3. New York has 2. Cincinnati has 2, Boston has 1. Opponents, we were kind of going through and different victims here. The Lakers are our highest victim of this era with 17 50-plus point games scored against them. New York second with 16. Syracuse has 10. I'm a little out of order here. Detroit actually is number one. Here, one sec. I had this in order. I don't know what the hell happened here. One sec. Sorry. I must have done like a undo. Sorry, one sec. That's going to be impossible to read without doing that. There we go. Man, what the hell happened here? I must have hit undo on something and did it too. Okay, there we go. Okay. And then as far as opponents here, our leader, Cincinnati, with 18 put on them. They're tied with Detroit as well, so both those teams have 18 put on them. The Lakers coming in, tied for, I guess, second, you would say, if you're tied for first here, or third, whatever you want to say. Lakers, they have 17. New York has 16. St. Louis, 13. Boston, 13. Syracuse, 10. The Chicago Packers, 7. Baltimore, 5. Warriors, 4. Chicago Zephyrs, because, of course, they, you know, kind of a difference. So we split those up. They have 4. San Francisco Warriors, 3. And Philadelphia 76ers, 3 put on them. So just kind of an idea of where the franchises go there. You obviously combine the Packers and the Zephyrs, you get a little bit more. But Cincinnati and Detroit are our tops there with 18 apiece for both those teams.
Yes. And if you combine the Nationals and Sixers, you get 13 as well. So obviously most of it is the teams that were there the longest. So you had the Bullets also there. You've got 16. So there's not really, outside of the Warriors having a low amount against them because, you know, most of that time Wilt was playing for them. There are not, the teams are fairly even on the list with the Royals and the Pistons, you know, obviously having a slight edge over everybody else.
Yeah, it's different than like we looked at the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And for some reason, everybody liked to do it against the Nationals for some reason. Right, but here, right. Here it seems pretty spread out. Yeah, it's like there's no real. And yeah, when you combine franchises and because that'll kind of combine some of those back end teams a little bit. There's no real. Nobody's really beating up on anybody. It's just kind of like everyone's pretty even, and it's just a matter of how many times are you facing, and do you have Wilt on your team? If you don't have Wilt on your team, then you're probably gonna get 50 scored on you at some point. So,
yeah, exactly. So. The 64 season, we're getting back to more normal numbers. We only have 12 of 50-point games in the season, which is 3.1%, which is still a lot, but is a comparable number to right before things explode in 62. There are three players who do it. 10 of them are by Wilt Chamberlain, one by Bob Pettit, and one by Hal Greer, a new name on this list, 15th player in history to cross the threshold.
Yeah, and Greer's a guy that we've talked about a bunch on this show as well. This is his one and only 50-point game. He finished his career with a point-per-game average of 19.2 and had 20-plus points per game 8 times in his career, as well as 2 seasons in the high 19s as well. So a pretty good scorer overall. Like, so I may be a little surprised that he didn't have more of those, especially given the era that he played in. But it probably plays a big part of the fact that he and Wilt were on the same team, and they helped Philadelphia win the championship in 1967. So good for him, though. I mean, that Wilt gets his title, and Greer is kind of the guy that comes in and really does help that a lot. And that year as well, Greer was the leading scorer in their playoffs, 27.7 points per game, which I think is notable as well, that Will kind of has to take a little bit of a back seat that year to let Greer become the top scorer. And that's the year that they actually win their championship as well. Hal Greer noted for his jump shot for his free throws. So instead of just a standing set shot for his free throws, he would jump. So he's known for that. Greer, as still to this day, is the Sixers leader in all-time points scored, field goals, field goal attempts, games played, and minutes played as well. So good stuff for Hal Greer there.
Yeah, and talking about the fact that you only have this one, he's even early on in his career, he's playing with big scorers like Duff Shays with the Nationals and, some pretty balanced teams. And then, of course, later on, you got Wilt, you got Chet Walker, you got Billy Cunningham. So, it does make sense in context. But he was definitely, pretty big scorer for his time, especially, in his peak years. The other notable thing of the 64 season is Bob Pettit has the last 50-plus point game of his career, the 7th on the November 16th, 1963, and Wilt has the 7th in playoff history in 1964, 50-15 and 6 there, and that was in a... that was in a win against the St. Louis Hawks. So there you go. He did win some of these, didn't he?
See,
even some of the big ones. Yeah. So
he's not a total loser. It's just sometimes he scores 70s and loses. It's fine.
Just a partial loser. Yeah. We're all partial losers.
I feel like I'm much more than a partial loser every day of my life.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Oh, come on, Rich. I think of you as
winner. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Some nice Saturday mornings slurping coffee and talking to you about NBA history.
Yes.
I guess I'm not a loser. No, I'm really
Sunday
cool,
morning.
Actually.
But yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yes, you are really cool.
Thank you.
So 1965, 13 games of 50 or more. So again, back to a fairly normal number. That's 3.3% of the league's total. Three players cross it. We have 9 by Wilt. So still dominating, but not as much as he did before. 2 by Jerry West and 2 by Oscar Robertson, which is a little surprising that he didn't break through before 65 because he'd had 37, 40-plus point games at this point, but for whatever reason, didn't quite get there. Not like, just sort of an oddity. I don't know if there's a really particular reason for it. It wasn't like he necessarily played with a lot of other scorers. I guess Jack Twyman early on, but I don't know. A little bit of a surprise there.
Yeah, no, that is just because you would think that he, I mean, especially with that many 40s, that you'd get lucky sometime and just get to 50. But yeah, he never quite did, which is, a selfless passer. He was like, I got 44, enough for me, you guys can have the ball. Yeah, but it's just kind of strange that you'd think he'd break through, especially, given that, like, when there was so many in that one year, that 1962, you assume that, like, anybody who with any sort of merit would probably be able to get one. But yeah, some guys just didn't. And Oscar, obviously being one of those that had to wait a few years until he got there, but not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And a few of the key games this season, Wilt on November 22nd, 64, he has his 4th and final 50-40 game. No one else has ever had one. And then on the 26th, he has another 60-30 game. It would be the last game for anyone with 50 or more field goal attempts until 2016, which was the Kobe game that we referred to earlier. And it's also Wilt's 8th 50-plus game in which he has a true shooting percentage below 48. And he is, in fact, the 8th worst true shooting percentage games in NBA history in terms of ones that happen in 50 plus point games. So you take the good, you take the bad, and there you have, you know, the facts of Wilt.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of this is going to be just like the sample size is so large that like
right.
he's going to have basically every possible scenario of 50 point games because he's got so many of them. So like, yeah, he's going to have the worst shooting percentage. He's going to have some of the good, you know, and he's just going to have and there's going to be some weird things that I mean, and that's just kind of the Wilt facts that comes up. It's like when you have so many that the sample size is so large that, yeah, you're going to have some bad games. So it doesn't mean particularly that he was like a bad scorer, a guy who just was scoring right. garbage points or whatever. It's just like he had so many games that sometimes you're going to have bad 50 point games if you score as many of them as you do. So that's just, yeah, the Wilt facts for you. But there you go.
Absolutely. And most of those, you know, again, 48% of being about the league average. So they're bad true shootings in modern terms. But, you know, in terms of what was the average in the league at the time, they're high. I mean, now he
right
his true shooting percentage was generally way above the league average, although it's low compared to modern standards, mostly because of the bad free throw shooting. You know, I mean, he of course would occasionally have bad nights from the field, but you know, he was well above average from the field. It was more the free throw shooting that, you know, hurt him in terms of that. So and then Wilt has his last 50 plus point game as a Warrior on January 3rd, 1965. It's his third to last game with the franchise because he would be traded this year, becoming, I believe, the first player with a 50 in the season to be traded to another team. That has, I know it's happened since, but it has to be exceptional. We'll have to make a note of that one in the future and see
if we can
figure out which players have been traded during the season having 50 plus point game. I know Mo Williams off the top of
my head. Mo Williams.
Yeah.
Somehow that was the one I think of right away is Mo Williams. But right. There has to be other ones. Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Sure. And then later on, Wilt has his first with the Sixers near the end of the season on March 14th, 65. And capping off the end of the season is another playoff performance, Jerry West with the eighth 50 plus in playoff history and the first one of his career. So he would have another famous one a little bit later on in his career, which we'll get into in our next episode.
Absolutely. A little brief aside, as we do kind of positional breakdowns again of these 50 point games, unsurprisingly, center dominated the field here with 78.7%. That is largely because of one man, Will Chamberlain. Forwards, 8.7% of all 50 point games. Guards, 6.3% of all 50 point games. Guard forwards, as designated by Basketball Reference, 3.1%. And then forward centers, 2.4% in terms of position. So nothing surprising there. Centers still dominate this 50 point game thing, mostly because Will is dominating the 50 point games as well. I thought this is the most interesting, though. Wins and losses in 50 point games. Win percentage is only 67.7%, which is very well below what we've kind of gotten used to. All time, the win percentage is 73.2%. Then losses, of course, 32.3% in this era, 26.8% all time, which again, I think is a byproduct of Wilt. And again, like, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to like kind of pick on Wilt for losing these games or whatnot. It's like, if you score so many, you're going to lose some games. Like, they're not going to win every single game that he scores 50 in, and he scores 50 like in almost every game that he plays. So like, of course, they're going to lose some games. They're like, you know, he's scoring 50 so many times and so often that the sample size is going to be large, so you're going to lose some games in that. So it's not necessarily him not being good, it's just mostly there's so many giant samples here. So I just found that kind of interesting, though, that the of this era is going to grade, I think, the worst of any era in terms of wins, win percentage in 50 point games, which I think is largely because there are so many of them. But we'll see kind of and track that as we go on a little bit.
Yeah, we'll have to for the next show, we'll have to break down the all time with Wilt and the all time not include, you know, compare the Wilt games to all the other games and see if there's a big disparity in the you know, win loss record.
Yeah, yeah.
Next. I think that'd be interesting. So diving into the 66 season, there are only nine down, so only 2.5% of regular season games were 50 plus. This was the this is not the first season. The next season will be the first season of expansion. So so we have four players breaking through. We have familiar names of Wilt Chamberlain, of course, Jerry West. And then we get Rick Barry and Sam Jones, interestingly enough. So and Barry is about to become a very prominent figure in 50-plus point games, which we'll talk about in the next episode. Before we get into Barry and Jones's performance, the points per game would jump back up to 115. It would basically stay at around this number, 112 to 117, until the 72 season, and then would sort of settle into a lower 105 to 110 range until the mid-90s when it would fall below 100. So you know, we're at a relatively steady number for points per game for at least another few seasons. looking at the key performances for this season, Wilt has 53-21 in the Sixers' second game of the season. His true shooting percentage is 83.8%, which is the best true shooting percentage in a 50-plus point game in his career, and would set a pro record that would last for about 10 seasons. So, then, as we mentioned before, Sam Jones on October 29th, 65, it's his first 50-plus point game. He's the 17th ever to cross that threshold. At the time, he was the oldest to score 50-plus and would remain the oldest to score 50-plus for the first time. Until 1973, and he was at age 32, 127 days at this point. So, and then the Rick Barry, him cross 50 happens on December 14th, 1965, and then he set a NBA record for the youngest hit 50 plus. He was 21 years, 261 days. It would be broken by LeBron in 2005, and eventually the record would be set by Brandon Jennings in 2010. So, and while I was talking about that, Rich did a little bit of research in terms of the percentage with Wilt and without Wilt.
Yeah, so I thought I'd, you know, you mentioned that, so asked and answered. So Wilt's win percentage in 50-plus point games, 69.7%, a pretty nice number there for him. All non-Wilt's win-loss records is 74.2%. So not a dramatic difference. I would say, you know, that's enough where, like, just a large sample size would do it. It is less than, you know, the all-time record, but not too much. So 69.7% win percentage in Wilt 50 plus point games. So that's not too bad. I'll give, you know, that's, I thought it was gonna be a little bit less than that. So I don't think it's that gigantic of a gap. So
right, and as you said, I think it has more to do with the fact that Wilt just made it happen so commonly that it was more routine. Where, you know, it's obviously more of an outlier now, and it's going to happen in more often in games, I think, when, you know, your team is winning. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think the last game that we'll note in this era is from March 3rd, 1966, and Wilt has another 60-30 game going on, and he's approaching 30 years old at this point. He's 29 and a half roughly at this point, so it's kind of a good time to close out, because I think we're moving into a new era in which, you know, Wilt is moving on to a new stage of his career. As you talked about, he's going to be with the 76ers team, with Alex Hannum coming back as a coach for him for the second time, the first time with the Warriors, the second time with the Sixers, is going to be on a team where his focus is going to be much more rebounding, defense, and passing going forward, rather than the big scoring binges, although he will occasionally have them. And it'll be Rick Barry who's going to be kind of the dominant scorer over the next era. We have NBA expanding. We have the ABA coming along. The pool of players is going to be completely different, and we're going to, you know, have a completely different era than we had before in terms of 50-point games.
Yeah, I'm excited to see kind of a difference. This was an episode that I was really looking forward to, because it was going to be the ridiculousness of Wilt. But yeah, we're going to have some fun stuff coming up in the next few years as things kind of change a little bit. The NBA evolves, the ABA comes into play, and then, you know, obviously we're going to then after that get into kind of some of the stars of what I consider, you know, quote unquote, the kind of the modern era with Bird, Magic, and well, not Magic, because as we mentioned in one episode, he's not going to appear, but Michael Jordan, right, and some other guys as well. So it'd be kind of fun to see this evolution here. But this was, I thought, just an awesome episode just to look at, you know, just how ridiculous Wilt was and how ridiculous just the league in general was. I mean, like we said, this era stands so far head and shoulders above any other era in terms of 50-point games, particularly the 1962 season, which is just like not even close to any other season we've ever seen before and we'll ever see again. There's no way. I mean, if 2019 can only barely do what it's doing now, which is, you know, still registering pretty high, it's just nuts that yeah, it's going to be anywhere near what it was in 1962. So it's definitely a fun episode and a fun era to take a look at.
Absolutely. So yeah, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us on the Step Back at Fansided. And we're on a new podcasting platform. We're now on Spreaker. So if you want to go to our page at Spreaker and subscribe there, and we would appreciate that. We're still on all the same feeds, iTunes, Stitcher, you know, all the same places that we're there usually. It shouldn't really have any effect anybody listening to the episode. And give us a rating and review any of those places. We like them. They make us feel good. We're hoping everyone is enjoying this series in particular. If you want to give us any feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. So Thanks everyone for listening. We're back again soon.